This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.com. FM to get started.
There's some rough road ahead, but don't worry, there's a strap you can hold on to. The Better Call Saul After Show starts right now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, that's right. We are here, living the street life. Welcome to the Better Call Saul After Show. We're going to talk episode 5 of season 4. Quite a ride. Just like this show is every week. Isn't that right, Al?
Oh, yeah. It's your boy, Al G, a.k.a. Young Figurine, a.k.a. the Merry Wanderer, a.k.a. the Bavarian Boy.
Hey, I'm the Bavarian Boy. Okay. Don't take my name away.
Little Bavarian Boy.
That's right. We're the Bavarian Boys
the
with
Bavarian
a Z.
The Bavarian Boys. That's with our crew.
With a Z on the
with
end.
A Z, man. And we're all about that street life.
That's
so
right.
Everybody get the strap.
And I am also Christian Black, and I appreciate everybody being here. Very fun episode tonight, Jimmy heavy, and which is why we'll start with the other storylines. But first, Al, you got some news for us, don't you?
Okay, well, yeah, well, first off, let me just give a shout out to that song right there, man.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Randy Crawford. Classic.
When that song started, you and I both started writing down feverishly in our notes.
Bopping.
Before that, I was like, well, maybe the open from Dr. Zhivago, that could be interesting. And there was some soft rock when Jimmy was at the mobile phone store. And then I was like, oh, we've got it now. We ding, ding, ding.
Take us
winner,
right
winner,
to the
chicken
life.
Dinger. Yeah.
And, you know, of course, they show Jimmy in his little montage. He's basically a drug dealer for phones.
Don't worry. Yeah. That was not lost on me. When we talk Jimmy, we will definitely talk about that montage.
Did you want me to get into the news
now? Let's get the news first.
AfterBuzz
TV. Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey. You know, we got the page loaded up. This is fresh from Screen Rant. Ladies and gentlemen. Okay. What is the biggest issue we've been going back and forth on for the last few weeks? Well, let me answer the question. Christian and I have been going back and forth on who wrote the letter.
Yep.
And that's what this week's news segment is all about.
I did see this one.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So, and it's actually the title of the article from Screen Rant is called Better Call Saul, Bob Odenkirk Responds to the Chuck Letter Fan Theory. And as you know, we've all come out on different sides of it. I remember before, I was like, well, maybe my first instinct was, well, maybe Chuck wrote it.
I'm still sticking with Chuck, but we've had people in the chat make a convincing argument that it was like, but maybe Kim wrote it.
And I'm switching over. I've been, like, lured over to the Kim side, you know,
because
I was looking at her, and, you know, she's looking at him for his reaction. But guess what our boy Bob Odenkirk thinks? He calls BS on that theory. Let me just read you his quote. When asked about if Kim wrote the letter, our boy Bob Odenkirk, a.k.a. Jimmy, a.k.a. Saul, says, yeah, that's crazy. I don't believe that for a second. I don't think Kim wrote the letter. And I think that's what Chuck wrote a few years before. And just pro forma bull is that Chuck was spouting to the world. That typical Chuck always has to take the high road. Meanwhile, he's needling you, you know, the whole time because he's looking like the bigger man, but he knows just how to stick it to you. And that's what our boy Jimmy thinks.
Yeah, I did see that, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take that. But, you know, it's just a theory, and also maybe, you know, if he does know that Kim wrote it and then that comes up later in the season, well, of course, he's going to try and distract us with giving us the information.
See, you never know. See, yeah.
If you want to really hold on to that thought, that theory, I don't want to be the one to get anybody to walk away from it.
I'm still going. I'm putting all my chips on Kim wrote it. And I think maybe Jimmy's trying to throw us off the scent. Bob Odenkirk. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, Bob's trying to throw us off the scent. All right. So let us know what you think in the chat. Everybody goes back and forth on this. And is this a definitive answer that we got from Bob Odenkirk? Or does it really not help anything?
So we don't know. And, of course, he's not going to say whether he saw it in the script. Of course he didn't. He's not going to ever come
to
that.
No, I mean, if he knows, he might not tell us.
Yeah,
but that's
of course
all right.
He didn't tell us. Yeah.
All right, so there's a lot of stuff to talk about in this episode. As I mentioned, very Jimmy heavy, but that doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy the sequences that dealt with Mike. Sort of the very mysterious Frenchman shows up at an airport. It is the Denver airport. The shuttle bus pulled away, so just so we know where we were. And then that's where the intro came from. You know, it's going to be there's going to be some bumps. Hang on to the strap, and the Frenchman gives his estimate of 7 months for this mysterious job that is going to involve some drilling, but no blasting, and
because no one can hear,
And then Mike gets a phone call. Who we even in the moment, I think we all knew who that phone call was from. Gus Fring probably saying like, "Yeah, I'm not into this guy." And so the guy gets put back
unceremoniously,
and he's like, he's got his return plane ticket tucked into his pocket. What did you think about this sequence as it starts and as it unfolds?
Man, it was just classic Better Call Saul, classic breaking.
Classic Mike.
Classic Mike. Mike's just like the gruff professional. Like, yeah, I know it's expensive. Money's no object. And really, that's the funny thing is, we know Gus, really, money isn't the object. He just wants the job to be done right. And as soon as they took the hood off and they delivered him to the location, it's the laundromat that we're going to see in Breaking Bad where they cook the meth. So this is how they actually established that. They're going to dig and excavate, here's the word, 1,700 cubic meters of dirt.
Yeah.
Under this laundromat, under this laundry factory, to make sure that no one can smell, hear anything what's going on. And even while they're building it, they want to make sure that it doesn't draw any attention, which makes the job more expensive. But, of course, Gus Fring, money is no object. And what I like about their relationship with the man in black. Okay, first of all, they start speaking German.
Well, that's the second guy. The guy that we get, that's the German. So, the Frenchman is sent packing, and the second guy is the German. And he's saying in German that he's worried that he's going to throw up. And Mike's like, English, please. Yeah, he's just like, I don't have time for this. You know?
Get the guy some Dramamine.
I like, though, that the German guy's really thinking about it, though. And clearly, Gus was much more appreciative of his answer than the Frenchman.
Because he's letting him know every possible thing that could go wrong. Yeah. Instead of like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah, I can do it in six, but let's be 7 months just to be on the safe side. Oh, I don't got to blast anything. And this guy's like, oh, no. Like, I understand the nature of this job. It's going to be very, very expensive. So, I don't know. I think I found both sequences to be kind of fun.
You know? And it's a revealing thing about, obviously about Gus, because he's meticulous, but at the same time, he's not the guy that's going to shy away from a challenge. And the guys, after giving all the disclaimers, this could go wrong and this could go wrong, he's like, is it doable? He's like, it's doable.
Yeah, Gus specifically asked, is it impossible? He's like, very expensive and difficult, but not impossible. Yeah, and that's all Gus needed to hear. So I thought that was it was definitely an interesting, you know, sort of breaking up some of what Jimmy was up to for most of the episode. Jimmy's attached a little bit to Kim's storyline in that the Dr. Zhivago scene, which sends him off to the street life. But what we see is Kim's head clearly not in the Mesa Verde deal. She's helping, you know, get a plea deal for a guy who probably doesn't deserve it, but she's a great lawyer, so she's able to get him, you know, 4 months of time served. And I love the exchange with the prosecutor where he's like, what happened to 6 months? She's like, you're annoying me.
That poor dope.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, you should have taken the 6 months.
And so it's a nice callback to last week where we know the judge was like, you know, in the local courthouse. Stop trolling my, you know, stop trolling my court, and as or I'm going to give you some assignments. And as we see, you know, Kim's putting on her public defender hat, you know, and she likes it down there, you know, with the people and doing the most good with the downtrodden, doing some real work.
Yeah, and you can, I mean, obviously it comes to a head literally in the second case that she's handling, the woman who didn't go to her court date, and she pushed it for her, and she goes to get her, and Paige Mesa Verde, it's on the phone, and she's like, yeah, not now. Can't do
Classic.
It.
Yeah. How telling is that? She's like, okay, here's my bread and butter. Here's the job I've been doing for the last 6 years. I have to call you back. I'm moonlighting on this.
Yeah.
You know, on this other
and
game.
The interesting thing, too, is because the last time that we see Kim in the episode, you know, she is ready to fix it. And she's like, it's already fixed, but this isn't about the mistake. We got to make sure that you're in the game. And you can see she's like, well, it's not going to happen again. I take that to mean like, yeah, because – you know, this thing's not going to last that much longer.
And what I love about this show so much is we're – okay, these are character-defining moments, as you know.
Sure.
We're seeing two people who aren't happy with where they're at in this particular point in their life. And they're all grieving, and they're all finding different ways to deal with that grief. Where maybe the things that worked before don't really work right now, as we can – and we're going to get into the whole Jimmy thing. And I think his whole thing, you know, with the street life and all that is just, that's the way he deals with pressure. He acts out. He reverts back to the street life, to the hustle. And I guess we could see, like, bare bones, this is what Kim's made of. It really shows a lot more about her integrity. I always thought she was, like, a, you know, like a really a really cool chick, a very virtuous lawyer. But we just only saw her in the corporate world. But, yeah, this shows, like, you know, where her heart's at.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this Mesa Verde deal is good, solid money. It's a great gig, especially because her paralegal seems to do pretty much all the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so – but that's – her heart's not in it. Clearly, her heart's not
and
in it.
Here's the thing about both of them. It's not about the money for either of them. It's not about the money for Kim because clearly Mesa Verde, you know, she can sleep on her bed of money. And it's not about the money. It's not about the money for Jimmy. He wants the straight job, but rather than sit there and collect a paycheck, he will go out there and hustle.
Oh, he hustles.
Hit the bricks just because that's who he is. And that's all. That's his default. That's all he knows.
Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. But, you know, you're watching us or listening on iTunes. This is part of the AfterBuzz TV Drama Network. But we have a number of networks, and we're going to have Al tell you a little bit about that.
Hey, 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 AfterBuzzers.
That's right. He puts on the smart guy glasses.
The smart guy glasses.
That's how you know this is important.
This is official. Hey, After Buzzers. Our network produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows. From dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that works harder to serve our television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. We got several. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. So hit that subscribe button now for this channel, and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we'll thank you on the air, give you a nice shout-out. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV talk.
Thank you so much, Al, and thank you to everybody who's subscribing and commenting. We have a bunch of people in the live chat right now, so thanks so much. We had somebody was just pointing out that it's just too late. They can't do the live chat, but if you aren't watching live and you're watching the archive version, you just go ahead and leave the comments because we always look at them the next week. So please do that. But so you want to be an Imagineer is the online name. He says he or she says, I'm wired and awake after this episode. So ready to go, ready to talk about the show. An interesting thought from T.S., I bet Kim will end up defending the guys that mugged Jimmy. So I think that's a funny observation. This episode does start with a flash forward time-wise, but a flashback in our lives to the to the later part of season 5 of Breaking Bad. Now, I have confessed I don't have a lot of knowledge in my head of stuff like this, so I am getting this from IndieWire.com, credit to them, but they were very specific. This is Breaking Bad Season 5, Episode 15. Mm. This is right before the beginning of the episode. That episode is called Granite State. And Saul is about to leave Albuquerque and with the help of a vacuum cleaner repair service, which we see him make a very coded message there. And what they point out, and I haven't had the chance to do this and check and see it because we just watched the show right before we started. But if you go and watch Granite State, you'll be impressed by how perfectly Saul's wardrobe, luggage, and his hair perfectly match this scene that we just saw. When this scene starts, what are you thinking about?
I mean,
necessarily you had like, oh, this is season 5, episode 15.
Yeah, I didn't know it was season 5, episode 15, Breaking Bad, but I knew exactly where we were in the timeline. You know, we were right back at the law office. Francesca, who we had hired earlier, now we saw how they became, their relationship began, and then she's old and salty right now, you know? Yeah. I'm just like, yeah, you pay me my money, sucker.
Goes in for the hug, and she's just like, okay.
Yeah, just run me my money and tell me what you need me to do. But yeah, Jimmy's got his, he's packing his go bag, he's getting his nest egg out of the walls, he's tearing the place apart, and he's fixing to leave town. And yeah, I immediately knew where we were, but so we never saw this point, like, what, you know, the amount of money that he had.
Just tearing up, behind everywhere in the wall, he's just, there's more money. And then as soon as she's gone, you know, he makes the call for the vacuum cleaner repair service. And the key piece of information, which gives me the indication that we will flash forward, flash back again, is that she has to be somewhere November 12th at 3 p.m. to answer a call.
Because they're scheduled a call in the future.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, very
interesting. So there is that. So I think we will get to this point again, which, by the way, we are now officially we're going to be more than halfway through the season because we've got...
Man, it goes so fast.
And now we've got episodes 6 through 10, and then that's going
to
be it.
And just to clarify real quick, the call to the vacuum guy, he deals with passports, right? He's going to somehow get him out of town and change his IDs and stuff? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's my recollection, too. But again, people in the chat are always better at this stuff than I do. And by the way, case in point that we always read the comments from the week before... whether they're good or bad, Adam Reichertz last week said, I don't think these guys even watch the show. So much wrong information here. It's unreal. And we watch the show right before we come in here. If we're not smart enough to figure things out, we really rely on the people in the chat.
I don't know what's sadder, the fact that we do watch the show
and we just didn't get it?
We just get it wrong.
Yeah. Look, there's things that we got. Like we were just saying, like, no, season 5, episode 4, 15, that wasn't coming out of, either of our mouths, but I wanted to have that for everybody who was watching because it would be, it'd be a lot more fun.
And real quick, I got to toot on horns, duly noted to the commenter right there, but I got to stick up for Christian and myself. I think we do a very above average job.
That's right, above average. Yeah.
We're C plus.
C plus. You know what? On our best show, B minus.
There you go.
So that's still pretty good. Robert Kirkendall points out the cold opening was the first Better Call scene to take place during the Breaking Bad timeline. Mm. That is a statement from Robert Kirkendall. So if that is a wrong statement, then you can say Robert doesn't watch the show.
I'm just teasing.
Just teasing. So, all right. So we start off there, and then we get to our current timeline, which is Jimmy just still hoping that people are going to want the privacy sold here from CC Mobile. And I love the way that he's, like, trying to will that truck that kind of slows down and looks around. It's like he casts a spell. But you know what? It worked.
Jimmy's a force of nature.
Talk about that moment as Jimmy's watching.
It's typical Jimmy. Jimmy's the type of guy. He manifested it. He's the type of guy that will sell snow to an Eskimo. Whatever you need, Jimmy's the guy to do it. And because he's just a natural-born hustler. And one of the things when we were hearing, like, the music and all that, one of the things that occurred to me, it reminds me of the Superfly song. There's a song in my, like, Curtis Mayfield from the Superfly soundtrack. There's a line that goes, I'm just a hustler in spite of myself. Jimmy, it's not about the money.
Yeah.
It's not about the fame. It's about the rush, because that's who he is.
He was born to hustle.
He was born to hustle.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
on his license plate.
Yeah, that wouldn't call any attention. I just love the way how he works the whole situation. The guy comes in. He's like, all right, I'm on a fake phone call. And, you know, he sells it. And he's like, oh no, you can't have these. These are on hold. And then you see the guy buys the whole bag.
And then he breaks the burner phone right there, too. So you know you need to get a few of these.
Yeah. And clearly he's very happy with himself. He's like, great, I just did a good... did some good business for the company. And he's like, I really worked a good angle. And clearly, somewhere in the back of his mind, this is sort of, tugging away a little bit. Because when Kim needs to work, and he's like, you don't want to watch Dr. Zhivago?
I gotta go into work.
That was, I mean, I felt a kind of sadness because that shows like the wall in the relationship,
yeah,
right? How that leads to intimacy.
Yeah, that it's like, instead of like, oh, come on, don't work, he's like, great, here's an excuse for me to go get my hustle on.
Yeah.
And I love that montage. It was so great.
Classic,
you know,
man.
He's walking around. He's talking to everybody. And I'm so happy for him. I'm like, look at him. Look how happy
he is.
He's on
top of the world.
He's on top of the world when he's hustling and selling phones for cash. And, you know, I like that, you know, he paid for the phones himself, did it all on the up and up.
Yeah, that made sense conversation later when he was doing the little cash register.
We talked during that commercial break. We're like, well, I feel like we'll see where this goes. And, you know, and everything's perfect. And there's that minute where everybody kind of scatters because the motorcycle gang pulls up. And he's like, all right, I could leave. That's where he should have left, isn't it?
And that says everything you need to know about his character. He should have left because that would have been the safe thing to done. He's made all this money, but Jimmy, when we're talking about being a hustler in spite of himself, to even to nail that further home, he's an addict. He's an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
And that rush is the fix. It wasn't about selling. Obviously it's about selling, but it's not just about the money. The more dangerous it is, the more he likes it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he was experiencing there. And, you know, look, a lesser show would have him try and sell them to the motorcycle gang, and they'd beat him up and take the phones. Mm-hmm. But no, they're like, hey, this is a good deal. So he gets the money from the motorcycle gang. They're, you know, and then those punk kids who didn't want any part of him, they're like, no, we've been watching you. We know you have cash. And he gets his ass kicked.
Classic. I mean, Jimmy.
Classic this show, classic Jimmy. And I was just like, oh, I was so happy for him.
He can talk game with the gangsters and the bikers and talk about, you know, where they got their tats done and which particular, you know, prison. But it shows that he's still a little bit off. You know, the fact that he couldn't see these little punks coming.
Yeah, which I think that's the thing that he's mad about. Not even that it happened, that he wasn't able to prevent it from happening, or that, you know, they knew they could take advantage of him. Black Rhino 79. Sorry, it took me a second to figure it out. Black Rhino 79. Kim has to know Jimmy is hustling. Is she willing to look past it because she loves him? I would think that, you know, if he starts coming home
with
beat up.
With bruises and beat up and
if
stuff.
If it happens a lot, then it's going to be harder for her to look past. Yeah. But she's like, all right, you know, wrong place, wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, but that even, you know, made him realize that just how mad he was.
And but a spark of glimmer of hope, he actually has the self-awareness to, like, maybe I got to call that shrink right now. Because that's the time you usually call a shrink. Like,
now,
that.
See, I did make a note of that. I was wondering because the shrink was sort of a defining moment last week. Instead of actually wanting to talk to the shrink, remember Kim mentioned it, and instead of calling the shrink, he's like, oh, I'm taking that job, the job we had just seen him turn down. So now he wants to change the subject away. So he's like, hey, maybe I'll call that shrink. And I think he might very well have planned on calling, but the way I took it in the moment, it was like, this is sort of the reverse of last week, where it's like, hey, maybe I'll call that shrink. And she'll be like, wow, that would be really good. You know?
And he turns to an advocate for shrinks.
Yeah.
And you see Howard.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I don't know. I think that I was very disappointed that's how things went. But and, you know, look, it's sad that he realizes, like, all right, I guess I'm not cut out for the street life like I thought I was. And when he's, you know, wiping away the paint from the window, I'm like, oh, come on. This worked. Privacy sold here. You got that guy to come in. You could go out and hustle the burner phones. Somebody in the chat last week pointed out that in the Breaking Bad timeline, Saul always seemed to have plenty of burner phones. And so they're waiting for the connective tissue of, like, when he's like, maybe, like, when he quits, he's like, oh, hang on, let me take, like, 100 of these, or, you know, something like that'll happen.
So, he's got the hookup forever on the phone.
Yeah, right, exactly. He knows where to go because privacy is indeed sold here. So that brings us to where he runs into Howard. And, you know, it seems like it's completely happenstance that he runs into Howard. I think at first I was like, did he know he was going to be here? But no, because it's the PPD check-in that he has to do every 2 weeks. But I was my first thought was, and tell me if you felt this way, Al, was that he kind of knew that he'd run into Howard.
That didn't cross my mind. Good call. If you figured that out, I didn't see that.
Yeah, but I don't know that by the end of the scene I felt that way anymore. But that was my initial thought. I'm like, oh, okay. What is he doing right there at that moment? But okay. You know. And Howard gives him a little too much, as he said. He's like, I feel like I told you too much. Did you ever have insomnia? Which was a nice moment, you know?
Man, poor Howard's a mess. And this is the one time I actually, because he's always been kind of a dick. But
absolutely.
I'm starting to feel more compassion for him. You know what I mean? Obviously, he's not taking the death of his best friend well. And Jimmy is just like stuffing it down in denial and sleeping like a baby.
Yeah, exactly. So at some point, you know, that'll probably be a problem. So what we see during the actual PPD check-in, and so you want to be an Imagineer, makes kind of the same point. My heart is still breaking at how optimistic and determined Jimmy was during the episode's ending speech, contrasted to the opening, which is in the future, where he's tearing up his office to get all the cash that's hidden in it. You know, he wants to be the best lawyer. He wants to win more cases, and everybody's going to know. And I love the caseworker, whatever you want to call him, but the caseworkers is basically like, so lawyer? You know, he's just like, he gives this whole speech and he's like, so I'm just going to write down the word lawyer. That's all that really boiled down to.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy, man, delusion is a powerful drug because we know he's capable of doing these things and being a great lawyer on the right side of the law, but he's really selling a dream to himself. And I think that's part of the tragic thing with his brother Chuck, is because here's the thing. Jimmy's like one of those guys that could have gone either way, but Chuck was the brother who always said, you'll always be slipping, Jimmy. You'll always mess it up. And I think that's always playing in the back of his psyche.
So You Want to Be an Imagineer also says, I really think the cold open contrast. Oh, no, that was. I really think the cold open contrasted with the ending of this episode cements Jimmy's transition into Saul as one of the all time great character arcs. So it was a two part that I should have actually read before, and I did not. But I just wanted to make sure I got that in there.
Right on.
So anyway, I think that that pretty much takes us through everything. And I don't know, do you give us sort of an overall feel for you on this episode, Al, you know, the ride we had, you know, the little bumps and pun intended for the little story with Mike and the Frenchman and the German and Gus.
All that. I mean, we talk about how detail-oriented the show is, but to me, the character moments are in the mundane. You know, that's when you see who each character is, and, you know, like when he's bouncing the ball, you know, when Kim's trolling the court, and when, you know, the little negotiation that she's doing. That really tells you who these people are, you know, and what their integrity is. And you know, they say past this prologue, you already – I don't know, man. I hate to say it, but I see Jimmy's downfall coming a mile away. We know what happens, but I already know how this movie's going to end, even though we've seen it before, just because I know Jimmy. Unfortunate. It's kind of sad. It's kind of a tragic tale.
There was somebody else in the chat last week, Angie Parker. Do you guys actually watch the show, or do you just have it on in the background while you play Candy Crush? Do people still play Candy Crush? That was really my
question. Candy Crush?
I guess. And really what the problem is that we didn't take away the right things from there was the grief meeting that we were at. Mm-hmm. And I was really focused on the guy who was faking it. So Maddie is Mike's son who died, which we did talk about that. Mike was remembering when he made cement and was putting a swing set or playground for his son. Yes, absolutely. And Stacy alluded to Matt, her husband, Mike's son, not her son, talking about his childhood in an earlier episode.
Yeah.
So Mike is remembering this beautiful bonding time between his son and he. All the while, the blonde sitting next to him is his daughter-in-law, Stacy.
Stacy.
Yes.
And I got that name wrong, too.
Yes,
thank
but
you.
It was the wrong name.
We haven't seen that character, man, in years.
And she's talking about how she's not remembering Matt even at times when his memory would normally come up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I feel like this is our above-average coverage of the show. Did we give you an A-plus coverage? No, we didn't. There are only two of us here. There should be people on this panel be like, Didn't you miss that? But that's why we have all of you.
And that's why we're getting to effort too. If,
yeah. We have shelves of trophies for effort. But, look, that's why we lean on everybody in the chat so much. And we've gotten information that we've missed, but I love getting the theories from people. Like the whole, did Kim write the letter? That didn't start because you and I were wondering about it. That's the great people that we have in the chat.
And can I say this, man? I'm going to shoot us some bail, man. Just because Christian and I are like your everyman. We're the everyman fan. We're not we're super fans, but we're not the fan who has it rigged and has it, already figured out. We're like the guy like you, the little schlub on the, on the couch, with his chips and trying to figure it out. We eventually get there. Maybe not as quick as you, but we'll get there.
Exactly. We'll get there, It's and I don't know. I think that when you cover these kind of shows, it's good to have the mix. And you in the chat, you are the diehard people that are still up at 1:40 in the morning East Coast time because you're like, no, I still want to talk about it. And by the way, thank you to Watcher Carter. I would give you a solid B, not a B minus. I will take that B.
Thank you.
I believe the old saying is B's get degrees. And solid B. By the way, the same Adam who last week asked if we even watched the show is in the chat tonight. So thank you, Adam, for coming back, because if you think we didn't watch the show, I don't know why you came back. But with Gus's Lab being 1 to 2 years out, we could be very close to the start of the Breaking Bad timeline running concurrently with Better Call Saul. I think that, that estimate of 1 to 2 years. And I don't know. We don't know. I mean, look, we're season 4 of this show. And can we be so lucky to get 6 or 7 seasons? Probably not more than that, though. So I think we're going to get closer and closer to it. I would be really surprised if the show is really, except apart from like these flash forwards, like we had at the beginning of the episode, I feel like the main body of the show will always be before Breaking Bad, but maybe I'm wrong. That'll be interesting if it's not, by the way. But I think getting these flash forwards is sort of like a fascinating way to juxtapose the character, like was pointed out in the chat. That speech at the end, that guy who has that speech is the guy tearing up his office looking for the box cutter. Can't even remember what a box cutter's called because he's breathing so heavy because he's got to get all the cash.
Small prediction, I literally think, because I feel like Bob Odenkirk is such a perfectionist, I think he will literally take us up to the edge where we see Walter White leaving the high school or something like that, right up to the moment, where Breaking Bad begins, because he's so anal, but so anal and perfect with it. I don't know. We'll see.
Tim Reno likes how the cash was in rolls, Salamanca, he puts in there. And I like the visual of rolls of cash. And by the way, I like that he tries to give Francesca one. And then he's like, he's like, okay. And then even realizes that two is not enough, Tim Reno also asks, Jimmy's beatdown could be opening the window for the role of Huel the bodyguard. And Adam points out, especially because they bring back so many fan favorites from Breaking Bad, I wonder if a future scene answering the question if Huel is still waiting in that room all the fans have been asking.
Nice.
So anyway, that's what's going on in the chat. And look, we're having fun. I love watching the show. I love being able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And also, look, there's a lot of shows where if you say things like, do you even watch the show? They're probably not going to read it. I think it's funny.
We take it as true.
It's like, because I know we're watching the show. Maybe we're just idiots. That could be the real problem, But anyway, well, you don't like to – oh, and I don't know if you guys know this. He doesn't – Al doesn't like to watch the coming attractions. You don't get that much from it. But, it just looks like it's going to keep – things are going to keep progressing. And where do you see – so we're halfway point of the season. And this is not a specific prediction, but where do you think we're going to go over the next 5 weeks?
I think we're going to get that cathartic bloodbath, where things are going to boil to a head, With Gus Fring and the Salamancas, we know that the Salamanca twins, they last because they appear in Breaking Bad. Yes. But I do think things are going to come to a head as far as, their inter-turf war. I don't know. Besides that, Nacho, prediction. Hot take, sad take, I don't think he's long for this world.
You don't think he's going to – we're going to be sitting here talking about season five and how Nacho is so involved?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, because if people point it out, it's like, nah, I don't remember Nacho from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of the problem. And by the way, let me just – a quick thing. Tim Reno points out – Tim Reno 72. There's a split second when Jimmy was selling phones out of the trunk. He sold a phone to one of Jesse's partners. No, I definitely didn't pick up on that. But that's that's why we love you guys. That's why we like you guys reviewing the show more than we even enjoy ourselves. It really helps sort of add another
level to
it.
We've seen that hot dog place before, right, in Breaking Bad? I feel like we have. Maybe you guys can help us out in the chat.
Yeah, well, now I'm afraid to say what I remember. Maybe it was on a different show.
Okay.
You know, maybe I saw that hot dog place in like a Quentin Tarantino movie, and wasn't on Breaking Bad.
I'll take
but yes,
a stab.
I think we've seen that place. So tell us if we're wrong.
They definitely will.
And, sorry, hang on. I got to play Candy Crush for the now. I'm just teasing. I think that basically this season will get us to the point where Jimmy is ready to be a lawyer again. I don't think we're going to get any further than that this year. But, you know, we're going to kind of see how he spins his wheels. And look, for a guy who's supposed to keep it on the up and up, well, he's selling burner phones for cash. He's stealing Hummels, you know. So he's not 100% on the up and up.
Do you associate with any criminals?
No. Well, known criminals.
There you go.
Which is a little different, I guess.
Jimmy's a classic guy. He doesn't totally break the law, but he'll bend it.
Yeah, he bends it. He dances around it a little bit. If there's a line, he tiptoes across it now and then. I think that's the key. I think that we're building towards him getting back to that point, and then that sort of season five and, you know, whatever there is left in the show, when he's got his law license back and he has the new firm and all of that, we'll really see sort of – we won't see – because we've already seen – it's not full circle. We've seen the end of the circle already. We'll just sort of see him kind of bring it right to the point where he starts there in Breaking Bad.
Hot take. Excuse me if I'm jumping out a little too early.
No, no, no. It's all right.
Because we know that he's going to become Saul Good. Hey, Saul Good, man. I want to know what he does as Jimmy, where perhaps he loses his license or he doesn't get it back or tragically sabotages that, because it resurfaces with a different name, right?
And it's a great point practice. Because he's not Jimmy McGill.
He's not Jimmy McGill in Breaking Bad.
Yeah. So whose law license does he buy? You know, to be like, I'm so good now. So, that'll be interesting to see. So, yeah, you know what? My hot take might be a cold take.
Okay.
And he doesn't actually – I think that he will get his law license back on the show. Now, does he keep it?
That's the thing.
That's the thing. And then we will see him become Saul. Super Curio says, I think it's so cool to see the scene from Saul from Breaking Bad, because we haven't seen much about Saul's transition into Gene. So great comments from everybody, and thanks to everybody who watches live. We know it's late. Even here on the West Coast, it's late. It's Monday night. Everybody hopefully had a great Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
But us, we'll be back next Monday at 10 o'clock, right after we watch the show at 9 Pacific, and we focus on it. I am looking at my phone while I'm watching, but it's because I'm taking notes. And Al, you don't know whether or not I'm playing Candy Crush. Or maybe Farmville.
Well, you don't know whether I'm taking notes or drawing like tic-tac-toe.
That's true.
Or...
I think you might have been playing Hangman by yourself.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks so much to everybody who joined us live in the chat. And as we said, if you're watching the archive version, please comment. We will look at it next week. And if you are listening on iTunes, rate, comment, give us all the great feedback that you love over there. And please, as Al told you, subscribe. Subscribe to our show. Subscribe to Whole Networks. Subscribe to lots of things. You can find me Sunday nights on Marvel TV Weekly. And Tuesdays, I do a show called The Trump Report. And I will be on the panel for the after show for Marvel's Iron Fist, which is dropping on Netflix on Friday. You can find me at ChristianDMZ. And Al, where do people find you?
Everybody, your boy LG. You can find me at JamaicaHouseDoc on Twitter. And I got some shows coming up. Going to be getting back with Vikings in another month or two.
All right.
And also, Mayans, the spinoff from Sons of Anarchy.
Right. That's starting really soon, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tomorrow. We cover it. So
tomorrow.
Tune into that.
Tomorrow. Yeah. That's how soon it starts.
Yeah. So
all right.
Check us out.
Yeah, check us out all across AfterBuzz and, of course, on social media. Anyway, thanks so much, everybody. We will see you next Monday night. Thanks.
Blah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.